Red, white and green, celebrating Arsenal's Irish connection. Having first written about the subject of Arsenal's Irishmen as part of a St Patrick's Day celebration, Ireland's fixture against Italy in the European Championships this summer seemed a good excuse to revisit the subject. While anyone with a tinge of emerald blood in them will probably be focusing on Ray Houghton's glorious winner in the 1994 World Cup.
Sheridan. But easy, onto it comes Houghton. And Houghton with a shot, and it's there!
We here at Daily Cannon figured A, that angle would be covered well already, and B, Ray Houghton was a Liverpool player, and frankly, the less said about them, the better. My own relationship with Ireland is largely defined by my possession of a surname oft associated with the southern end of that land, not to mention a curious collection of Irish blood gained from all the different parts of my ancestry. In fact, the most Irish part of me actually comes via Trinidad, and it was a full circle with the Caribbean that brought Ireland back into the family, with my mother's transportation from Jamaica to Dublin at the age of 9. Quite a shock for her, but at least it gave Phil Lynott a little competition. Of course, if you are listening to this, that means you are rather more interested in Arsenal Football Club than my personal lineage, and I promise I'm not just going to talk about myself. Any fan of a certain vintage will have some awareness of the relationship between the Arsenal and the Emerald Isle, but there will be a generation or two for whom this is a relative mystery. Everyone knows about the obvious Irish connection with Glasgow Celtic, and Manchester United and Liverpool have done a great job of selling their Irishness, aided by both their proximity to Ireland and their recent success. But most corners of Ireland have long maintained a loyal core of Arsenal support, and it would be fair to say that Irishmen have played a significant part in many key parts of Arsenal's history. Today, the club's playing staff has no Irishmen, and on the coaching staff there is only Jerry Payton working with the club's goalkeepers and former youth product Kwame Mpardu working as an academy coach, both of whom are very much behind the scenes. Those supporters with a more encyclopedic knowledge may recall League Cup appearances for Graham Barrett and Anthony Stokes in the last 15 years, as well as the much maligned Islington-born Eddie McGoldrick in the dying days of the George Graham era. But in the days before the birth of the Premier League, the Arsenal first team squad had always had a smattering of Irishmen. As many as 40 have troubled the club statisticians over the years. From goal-scoring debutant Belfast-born Patrick Farrell, who joined in 1897, and the nomadic Tommy Shanks, who scored 24 goals in 1903-1904, taking Arsenal to the top flight for the first time, all the way through to David O'Leary, who retired in 1993 and is, lest we forget, still the club's record appearance holder. Before the rules regarding youth player recruitment for English clubs changed in relatively recent years, Arsenal had for decades made a point of scouring Ireland for the best young talent it could find, as a key part of its youth recruitment. Not entirely dissimilar to Arsene Wenger's approach with the Barcelona youth team. In Belfast, Arsenal had John Dillon keeping an eye on young talent, but often he had his best finds snatched away by Manchester United, with only Steve Morrow and his League Cup winning goal to trouble the statisticians. Morrow, captain of the Pat Rice-managed 1988 FA Youth Cup winning side, has continued the tradition and now scouts and coaches for the club in turn. In Dublin, however, second-generation Arsenal fan and legendary scout Bill Darby provided four very notable first-team players from his home city in the late 1960s and early 1970s alone. Of course, when thinking of Arsenal's Irishmen, it is these nearly men of the late 1970s who first spring to mind. Despite one FA Cup win in the five-minute final in 1979, that Arsenal team probably underachieved. So often close to greatness, the team was broken up before it fully reached its peak, its heart ripped out by the departure of Dublin's own Liam Brady to Juventus. Arguably the Republic of Ireland's finest ever player, he was ably supported in North London by countrymen O'Leary, Frank Stapleton, the Van Persie turncoat of his day, and John Devine. They had joined already present Northern Irish teammates stalwart left-back Sammy Nelson, club captain and eventual long-term coach Pat Rice, and one of the top goalkeepers in the world, Pat Jennings. Even the manager at the time, Terry Neill, was a Belfast boy, who had previously distinguished himself in service to the club as a player, with over 300 appearances in the 1960s. All represented Arsenal in the ill-fated 1980 FA Cup final, where the 60-odd games played by the first team that season, and the heartache of the Cup Winners' Cup final penalty shootout defeat only days before, caught up with them at the worst time. West Ham's 1-0 victory remains one of the greatest cup shocks of the last 50 years. Of course, Brady remains Arsenal's most iconic Irishman. Despite leaving to play at the higher level that was Serie A in the 1980s, at the tender age of just 24, he racked up 307 first-team appearances for Arsenal, scoring 59 goals, the most memorable of which was in the 5-0 drubbing of the old enemy at White Hart Lane on the 23rd of December 1978. There are doubtless millions of Arsenal fans who still get shivers at the classic commentary.
Oh, Brady won it beautifully. Look at that! Oh, look at that!
In the same way that those of my age do at.
Arsenal comes streaming forward now in surely what will be their last attack. A good ball by Dixon, finding Smith. But Thomas charging through the midfield! Thomas, it's up for grabs now! Thomas! Right at the end!
Or slightly younger listeners.
Now Bowles. And it's Tony Adams put through by Steve Bowles. Would you believe it? That sums it all up.
England's Player of the Year winner in 1979, he still gets voted into every Arsenal all-time 11, and older fans maintain that he was never really replaced until the arrival of Dennis Bergkamp. What most people don't know, however, is that despite the London professional careers of his older brothers Pat and Ray, both of whom played for Millwall and QPR, the young Liam initially hated his time as an Arsenal junior, leaving after a few months, and it took weeks of persuasion by the Arsenal backroom staff and Irish scouts to convince him to give it another try. Although later a source of irritation after forcing a move to Manchester United, Brady's fellow Dubliner, Frank Stapleton, was almost as important to the club at the time, and the two had the archetypal on-field telepathic relationship. Stapleton was widely regarded as one of the best headers of the ball in the game at the time, and showed an underrated deftness of touch later echoed by Alan Smith, and he had a formidable goal record in the cup competitions that the club excelled in at the time. A fans' favourite and club player of the year in 1977 and 1980, he refused to sign a new contract in 1981, perhaps seeing the subsequent seasons of mediocrity on the horizon. And for the second time in 2 years, the club lost one of its stars for a vastly reduced price set by a dubious transfer tribunal, only this time to a domestic rival. He never quite hit the same heights at Manchester United, despite moving there in his prime, but did win the FA Cup twice more before his career slightly petered out. Given that he had supported them as a child, it's no surprise that he went to Man United and self-identified as a United man. He was never forgiven by Arsenal fans, particularly as he had negotiated with Ron Atkinson behind Arsenal's back, and he later admitted it was a move ultimately about money, which was even more taboo in those days. He was last seen as assistant manager of Jordan, working for his old United teammate, Ray Wilkins. The third member of the Golden Irish Trinity was elegant defender David O'Leary. Coming over for a trial on the same trip as the later injury hit John Devine, he'd actually been born in Stoke Newington, before moving back to Dublin as a three-year-old. A first-team debut at 17 served notice of his talent, but no one could have anticipated him clocking up 722 appearances and a stint as captain of the club over an 18-year career. After finally winning the league title in 1989 to go with his League Cup victory in 1987 and FA Cup win with the rest of the Dubliners in 1979, O'Leary was one of many to fall foul of George Graham's draconian style, training with the reserves for a time. But his professionalism and commitment saw him return to the first team squad to win another title winner's medal in 1991 as his career was winding down. And ultimately, he became George Graham's assistant at Leeds United before an exciting period at the helm of the club himself. In recent years, he has also started to come to Arsenal games as a fan again. By now an elder statesman in the team, Pat Rice had matured from apprentice to club captain. Born in Belfast on St Patrick's Day, he was the one player to win both the 1970-71 double and the 1979 FA Cup final with the club. Born a fortnight before his eventual full-back partner and fellow Belfastian Sammy Nelson, who himself played nearly 400 times for the club, his family had moved within spitting distance of Highbury when he was 10 years old, and he had grown up idolising the club. This gave him a single-minded determination to play for the team that would more than make up for his limited skills, confounding many at the club who thought he would never make the grade. Famously dedicated and often sneaking in after hours to undertake extra training, Rice went from a prospect with an outside chance to lifting the FA Cup as captain and playing 528 times for his boyhood club before a brief stint at Watford, captaining them to promotion to the top flight for the first time and scoring in their first game at the highest level. A true Arsenal man, he then went on to become a very successful youth team coach and subsequently assistant manager, following 16 years at the club as a player, with 28 more on the coaching and management staff. Pat Jennings was a different story. Originally from Newry in Northern Ireland, he was the only one of the 1970s Irish contingent at the club not to have come through the youth system. By the time Jennings moved to Arsenal, he had already played 14 seasons in England and had racked up over 500 appearances for Watford and Spurs, as well as having a vast amount of international experience. The upstarts down the road thought he was in decline at 32 and let him go for just £45,000. But with a point to prove and legendary professionalism to go with his famously huge hands, he played another 320 games for Arsenal, playing in three domestic and one European final. A year after retiring from club football with Arsenal, he collected his then world record 119th cap in defeat to Brazil in the 1986 World Cup, a game which I remember watching on television. He returned to Spurs after retirement and until recently still worked there in a coaching capacity. He still attends some Arsenal games to this day and finds himself in the unique position of being equally welcome at both clubs. Of course, for every Brady, Stapleton or O'Leary, there was a Jim Harvey, 1977 Irish Young Player of the Year, who eventually went on to have a strong career in the lower leagues. Or Joshua Sloan, 15 clubs in 10 seasons. Or Peter Tilley, who turned out to be a better bowls player than footballer. The step up from the Irish leagues to the English top flight was not an easy one, and many Irish players down the years found it harder to adjust to London life than other parts of the country, particularly those hailing from smaller communities than Dublin or Belfast. It seemed easier for those used to the urban life to settle, as perfectly illustrated by diminutive 1950s wing wizard Joe Haverty, who after real impact eventually lost his place due to injury troubles and requested a move. A native Dubliner, he never settled professionally outside of London, and only ever really found his form again during a spell at Millwall. He then went on to scout for Arsenal in Dublin in the 70s and 80s, before passing away in 2009. Indeed, even as far back as the 1920s, when Arsenal was still searching for the status, players from Dublin and Belfast, such as full-back pairing Andy Kennedy and Alex Mackey, settled better than their fellow countrymen, and helped the club establish itself as a challenger for honours. There were, of course, exceptions, such as 1960s fullbacks Eddie McGill and Billy McCullough, from Lurgan and Carrickfergus, two towns with populations that even today are only just over 20,000. Yet another Dubliner discovered by Bill Darby, beanpole striker Niall Quinn's background as a Gaelic footballer echoed that of 1930s great Jimmy Dunn, as did the fact that his best years were not as an Arsenal player. Both had early promise snuffed out by the arrival of better players who wrote themselves deeply into club folklore. Ted Drake in 1934 and Alan Smith in 1987. It took Quinn new pastures and extended runs as a first-choice striker to mature to a standard that would have suited Arsenal. But he remains the last Irishman to come through the youth team at Arsenal and become more than just a small footnote in the club's history. Although relatively minor, without his contributions, Arsenal would not have won either of their trophies in the 1980s, and he was invariably looked on fondly following his departure. Of course, there have been attempts to rekindle the Irish presence in the Arsenal team, initially via the tried and tested method of youth recruitment, particularly under Liam Brady's watch, when old scout Bill Darby was one of his first appointments. There have also been attempts to recruit from outside, notably when Roy Keane turned us down in favour of Manchester United, and an early attempt to pick up later Spurs frontman Robbie Keane. Ultimately though, the game has changed, with declining standards in Irish coaching aping the Jack Charlton model, and the fact that Arsenal are now a global club with global stars who have restricted access to the Irish pool due to changes in youth recruitment rules. The biggest factor is a simple one. There are no longer more than a handful of Irish players of the standard required to play for top English clubs. There has been rather more joy on the Irish representation front in the Arsenal ladies team, with Kira Grant, Emma Byrne, Niamh Fahey and Yvonne Tracy winning the quadruple in 2007, and a continual Gaelic presence has been in the side for almost two decades. One of my favourite Irish Gunner stories is that of one of the last of the top-flight amateur footballers, Dublin-born practising doctor and inside forward, Kevin O'Flanagan. He played 14 times for Arsenal in the 1946-47 season before his burgeoning medical career and an ankle injury forced him to end his playing days. In those days, a man with a profession could earn a lot more not playing football. Of course, it isn't all about the players and management staff. A football club is, after all, most important to its supporters. And despite traditional domination by Celtic, Liverpool and Manchester United, Arsenal still have strong fan bases across Ireland and are the fourth most popular club. Indeed, according to research by Forza Football, out of the teams who made it past the group stages in the Champions League for the last 2 years, it was Arsenal who most Irish people surveyed wanted to win. One thing that is particularly interesting is that the club supporters seem spread fairly equally over all parts of Ireland, north and south. For instance, despite the proliferation of Arsenal players being mostly from Dublin or Belfast, it seems Derry, almost on the western border between Northern Ireland and the Republic, has a particularly committed and long-standing Arsenal fanbase. There are supporters' clubs in almost every large town, with 24 in the south and 9 in the north officially listed on the Arsenal website. To put that into context, there are only 4 more across the entirety of mainland Europe. Which begs the question, why are Arsenal so popular across the Irish Sea? Of course, many people in Ireland became Arsenal supporters as a direct result of the aforementioned side of the late 1970s, with the Gunners Irishmen being key players for both Northern Ireland and the Republic. As Arsblog has described at length before, for many kids growing up at that time, they were all Irishmen, whether from the north or the south. And the pain he felt at the sale of Liam Brady to Juventus, despite having only seen him play on television, was felt all across the Emerald Isle. However, the support for the Arsenal was well established within Ireland even before the significant presence of Irishmen in the team. Much like Bill Darby's father, many fell in love with the all-conquering Arsenal team of the 1930s, with both its incredible success and its sense of style, and its willingness to embrace all in the pursuit of excellence. With players from across the British Isles, and only the backward Home Office stopping the club from taking on some of the European greats of the age, the club lacked the same parochial view of many of its contemporaries, and as such gained a following all around the world, particularly in those countries with ties to England. This was built upon by what became a large Irish presence in the stands at Highbury, particularly either side of World War II. There were well-established and growing Irish communities all over North London. Holloway, Highbury, Finsbury Park, Camden and Kentish Town were about as Irish as you could get without being in Glasgow or Ireland until the 1980s, not to mention the affectionately known County Kilburn, all of which fell within the club's catchment area. And of course, many of those in London at the time were economic migrants who returned home and took their love of all things Arsenal with them. A love that has endured and grown and been joined by future generations.